Hello and welcome to episode number 372 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
We are back to discuss a little movie that's we've wanted to see for about a month now.
Yeah, I forgot that it existed, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it came out in the madness of Halloween on our dearest Shudder. I think we've covered a couple of these before.
We've covered 2 and 3.
Yeah, that sounds right. Like, we definitely saw at least 3, and I think we saw 2 as well. Did a show on it.
I think we did, because we pretty much watched 1 independently and then found out like a fortnight later that 2 was coming out, and then we watched it pretty quickly.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get to this newest one shortly. There is only one news story this week, but it is a nightmare. There's about... I've rolled like all these stories into one because this has been ongoing over the last week. It's pretty insane. I've just titled it the Scream 7 shit show. So if you don't know any of this news, strap in.
This could be fun.
The main headline of this broke just after we recorded last week, so this is like a week old, but then it has been good updates, that not good in the sense of positive, but like more information on the story, so at least we can kind of put it all together now, discuss like what even is the future of this franchise right now, because it ain't looking good. The previously that we've discussed in the news before regarding the future of Scream, here's the things we knew prior to last week.
Oh, I did was, see
this. So yeah, we knew the directors weren't returning. We've discussed that.
Yeah.
Obviously off making a Universal monster movie scheduled for release in April next year. They kind of moved away. Spyglass wanted to continue with the franchise without them, so they hired Christopher Landon to direct the new upcoming Scream 7, of course director of Happy Death Day and Freaky, fantastic films. Those are like the main two things, and then the other small thing which we've then got a more clarification on now was that it was very unclear whether or not Jenna Ortega was going to be involved in the new film. There was a lot of rumors about her work schedule and stuff, so we've got an update to that as well, which we'll get to. But the lead story, and why this is a massive shit show, and then we'll kind of get into the rest of it, is that our lead actress, Melissa Barrera, who played Sam Carpenter in the films, has been fired from the next Scream film. Kind of pulling this from the BBC, because this is how big this story was. Melissa Barrera has been fired from the next Scream film sequel after its makers said her pro-Palestinian social media posts were anti-Semitic. The star has posted regularly about the Israel-Gaza conflict. Production company Spyglass said it has zero tolerance for anti-Semitism. People can look into that if they want. It's a very complicated thing. This isn't an isolated issue. It's worth saying, like, she's been posting multiple times over many weeks. And this was just kind of like a thing that then happened off the back of it. So that in itself is already such a conundrum to kind of talk about, because it's an actor getting fired for talking about something on social media. It's something that, like, on a personal level really drives me insane, that these kind of actors insert themselves into situations that they don't need to be a part of. Not even remotely commenting on what she commented on, just being completely general.
Yeah.
Like my rule is that if you're a rich, successful person, you need to be so careful with what you do if your said success is based upon you being popular in the public eye. And it blows my mind that these people just have untethered access to the internet in terms of just firing out their opinions at any given moment on any topic. How there isn't so many people involved in stopping that. This is going to cost not only her and her career, but so many individuals and so many companies, literally millions of dollars because of this. Again, regardless of whether you think it was the right thing or wrong thing to do, I'm not even remotely talking about that. I just find it insane that this was an issue that did not need to happen. If smarter people had got involved and said, don't talk about this, please. And the fact that there aren't like agencies, like whoever represents Melissa should be ashamed of themselves, because again, the reason why I mentioned this wasn't like a one post this happened multiple times over weeks. Like, how people couldn't have seen this coming and the writing on the wall, it just blows my mind. We've seen it time and time again, you know, like Gina Carano in Star Wars and stuff. Like, there's so many examples of this. And then there's plenty of examples of incredibly successful people who don't fucking say a word. Like, you don't know what Joaquin Phoenix's opinions is on anything because he keeps himself to himself and he just continues being a world-class actor. And there's obviously plenty of people like that as well.
It's, you know, it's when we see it with, you know, athletes and sports stars that, like, you know, send a tweet and it can get them suspended from their sport. And you just think, like, what are you doing? Like, why did you ever get in that situation? But I also hate the fact that the world has become this way. You know, like I say, I have no idea what she said, the politics behind it or anything. So I'm not commenting on that in the slightest. It's just the fact that it frustrates me that, exactly what you've said, that these people are doing it because they know that's the world we're in. That you can get deleted for a tweet that you send, let alone multiple tweets. And so you've got to be aware of that as a person in the spotlight in 2023. This is the world we're in, and you have to be aware of that. And if you believe so strongly that that's the case, like, you are potentially throwing your career away over your beliefs, and then you have to make that decision. But I also hate the fact that you do have to do that. And the fact that these things are so heavily linked, and the fact that, because I don't know what her politics are, I don't know what her tweets are. What I know is I like the last two Scream movies, and I want her to be in the most recent one, and I want her to be in the new one. And now that's not happening. So similar to Neve Campbell, where it was like, she wasn't in the most recent Scream movie that we really liked because of external things, but at least those were remotely in the film world, and it was contract negotiations and pay, and I still didn't like that. The fact that now we're not going to get the conclusion of this trilogy, you know, Jenna Ortega for other reasons, and then now not, you know, this shit show for reasons that are just completely outside of the film world. Me, as someone that likes the Scream franchise, now doesn't get that character. Same with Mandalorian, that we got this, where it was like, you know, just these stupid external reasons for both ways that people in the media spotlight can't keep their mouth shut when they really should, because that's the world we're in. And I'm angry that this is the world we're in. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel frustrated for them that they should just be able to say shit and not get deleted instantly, but unfortunately this is where we're at, that someone can send a tweet, you know, they can dig up a tweet. If you're like a budding actor now, if you've sent a tweet 3 or 4 years ago, that could fuck you. You then become the biggest actor on the planet, and they unearth this tweet from 5 years ago that was a joke that you sent on, you know, Twitter, and you're done, you know. It's like, you know, God forbid we ever get super famous, because this podcast will screw up, mate.
Yeah, it's so true that what you said of, like, it really is the reality of the situation. Yeah. And it's the rise of, it's the world we live in now, with social media being embedded in everything. I think Melissa is of that generation, that she's clearly grown up with social media. It's always been a part of her life. And so she probably does just view it as like, oh, you know, it's my own personal thing to do with it, whatever I want to do with it, as everyone has the right to do. But, like, from just a external standpoint, I just don't I can't fathom how these actors are allowed to do this untethered. And from a fan perspective, as someone who just loves a lot of content and entertainment, but I couldn't give a fuck about what people have to say about certain things. Nice. And again, no, that's just me, but like, I don't care what, you know, Neve Campbell has to say about things that aren't to do with Scream. Like, I really don't care. And so it is frustrating, because we're the ones that really get kind of hurt the most. Is we're just fans of the franchise and the film, and we're going to get into it, because there is unfortunately more to unpack here. But this is such a juicy topic that I'm sure we're going to talk about it at length, because it really is worth talking about. But it's just so frustrating, isn't it?
It really is. And like I was going to say, the other thing that just annoys me is I don't tweet my thoughts, because I don't care enough to put it out there. And I'm a regular person that's got time to kill. These are like mega rich people.
I know, I don't understand.
Like, you've got so much money that you can spend better use of your time doing than sitting on an app being like, I don't like these people, I like these people, or whatever. Like I say, I'm not talking about what she says, just in general, when these people, Elon Musk's one that makes me laugh, when I'm like, you're the richest man in the world. You're like, so, like, got so much that you could do that's better than sending, and not even like buying Twitter or any of that stuff I'm talking about. It's when he sends little pissy tweets. You're like, mate, just what are you doing? Like, he's replying to trolls on Twitter, and I'm like, you're Elon Musk, mate, and like, you know, just all of these other people, and I'm just, when you see these people of influence getting involved in debates like that, I'm like, you are so far above this where you shouldn't be wasting your time. The fact that you've even got a phone, like, if I was that famous, I wouldn't have a phone. Because I'm just like, there's nothing on there that would interest me, and if anyone wants to contact me, they can go through. So I'll employ someone to be a voice.
Yeah.
It, like, you know, it's unfathomable to me that the people, like I say, in that, you know, level of fame and have this money would actually waste their time on it anyway. As a side note, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like you say, for people that actually have things going on in their life, it always blows my mind how much time is wasted on these things. But it really does show that, like, this social media addiction is a cancer that, like, festers in people in a ways that they don't even realize. And I also think another aspect of this, and that's for, like, normal people as well, but I think what you're bringing it back to, like, famous people, this is a really good reminder that, like, a lot of famous people, in particular actors, are narcissists. Like, they love giving their opinions on everything. They constantly want that positive reinforcement. They're like, yes, what you're saying is correct, and I agree with you. And social media is the perfect outlet for that. You're constantly getting that reinforcement that you're right on everything, and everyone cares about your opinion on every single topic. And it just feeds into that narcissism, and it really is just crazy. Like, so yeah, that's kind of the first step of this. She's been fired, of course. There's a small little update here, which I had to throw in because this just also made me laugh, because it's perfect how he does not understand the irony with this. But Christopher Landon tweeted about the situation and then deleted the tweet, which is hilarious. Like, that's going to do anything, but I've got it here in 4K in front of me. And this tweet just makes me laugh so much, because, again, this just shows you.
Hang on, once you delete tweets, they're not deleted from the internet, full stop.
It's mad, isn't it? It's crazy. You learn something new every day.
Is that not how it works?
So yeah, he tweeted, everything sucks. Stop yelling. This was not my decision to make. Now, again, this is someone who is speaking from the heart. This is someone who is, like, just immediately saying his thoughts on the situation.
Yeah.
In untethered access to the internet. So now we all know what Christopher Landon was exactly thinking about this moment. But it's like, everything sucks. Yeah, I agree with you. Stop yelling. Well, saying that on the internet is, like, the most pointless thing you could ever say ever.
I love that. I think that's the best thing you could possibly say on the internet. Like when you're angry at people and you want them to stop and you tell them to stop, it's like when I see people that have got kids and they're trying to tell the kid to stop having a tantrum in the middle of them having a tantrum, and I'm like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, it's just so dumb. And then him saying this was not my decision to make, again, he's just adding fuel to the fire, because he's now putting him, he's drawing a line where he's saying, like, I personally want Melissa to be a part of this film, and listen guys, it's out of my hands. And so again, it murkies the waters of, like, well, what the fuck are you gonna make now? Like, it's just that tweet, and there's a reason why it swiftly got deleted, doesn't help at all, and just adds to the confusion and annoyance surrounding the future of this franchise, which is, again, we've talked a lot about the social media thing, which I think is really interesting, but, like, fundamentally, we're just huge fans of Scream. Like, I fucking love Scream so much, and I'm so happy that the new films post Wes have been as good as they are, because this franchise could have easily gone the way of, like, a vast overwhelming majority of horror franchises, which is that they get shitter over time, and Scream in particular this year is such a huge standout, and I'm just sad from the franchise perspective the most. But then the next part of this is, as the shit show keeps going, one day after Melissa Barrera was let go, Deadline reported that, Jenna Ortega will definitely not be returning for the film. They clarified this has nothing to do with the fallout of Melissa Barrera's firing yesterday over the actress's social media repostings, nor does it have to do with the actress asking for an end to her Scream contract. We understand that Ortega's exit from the next Scream was discussed prior to the actor's strike. A script for Scream 7 is not ready yet, and she is due to head to Ireland in April to shoot the second season of Wednesday, which will go throughout the whole summer. So, yeah, she was not returning anyway. I have kind of a small conspiracy theory here, which I want to throw in just to add even more fuel to this fire. In that kind of, I think they just want an excuse. I think this film was in complete turmoil once the directors left. I think once Jenna's future was then clarified she was not going to be involved, I think having the sisters involved, you can't have one without the other. And even though Sam is clearly our lead, it would have been so weird to her to be like, here's this Ghostface-centric story that is the conclusion to this core four, but my sister just isn't here. She's off partying in Paris for the weekend. Like, it just would have not made any sense. So I do think there is something to this. I think it was 50-50, where they were in the midst of reworking it. They had no idea what to do. They already knew they were down one member. So then they went, well, we've now got a reason to fire her. We'll fire her and say it was out of our hands. We've got rid of our two biggest stars. Now you just kind of immediately throw away the other two, basically. And now you can just probably start from fresh. That's my conspiracy theory. Do you think there's any credence in that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a garbage truck on fire for a while, you know, and that's the problem with it. Post the last movie, where the movie's fantastic, and it's like they've built a new franchise on the pillars of the core four, and then suddenly Wednesday comes out, and they realize that they got a struggle to get her back, struggle with the rest of them, and then suddenly they don't have a script because they've lost the creative talent as well. And they just think, well, at this point, what's the point? Like, why are we struggling? The glue has already gone, so why struggle? Because I think they could easily have the brother and sister in Woodsboro again. And just they've moved back there, and they're just, you know, they could still be there, and it wouldn't feel as out of place if they were just like chilling in the background as less, you know, as secondary characters, but at least giving us some lineage. But not that I personally would particularly want that, but I think you could easily do that. But yeah, the second you have one of the two sisters not in it, you can't have the other.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I can see your conspiracy theory being true, but also just the fact that this has just been off the fucking rails ever since they greenlit it off the back of the movie being a banger, and then had just nothing go their way ever since. And it's when I truly hate being in the know about these things. Like, I just wish that I knew nothing, and the second they make a Scream movie, because they're going to make another Scream movie, I just see the trailer and just go, oh, okay, they're not in it anymore. Okay, cool. Because I was salty, like, about Nev going into this most recent movie, just because it's Nev. And then when the movie comes out and you know, we're like, well, yeah, the legacy characters weren't what we were coming back for at this point. We were interested in new Scream stories, and it's like with this, if we get a new Scream trailer and it's just like, oh, okay, it's a brand new cast and it's a cool idea, like, would I be excited? Yeah, because I fucking love Scream. So, you know, and I just wish I didn't know all this shit.
Yeah, well, I hope we can get to that place at some point. Yeah. But yeah, that is unfortunately not today. No. The other thing I wanted to mention, I forgot to mention it as part of my conspiracy theory, and then we'll move on to the last piece, is kind of semi-related to this. In the last week, Noah Schnapp, who plays Will Byers on Stranger Things, he's been involved in this as well. Not Melissa particularly, but like tweeting and talking about the same conflict.
For fuck's sake, Noah. Delete your fucking Twitter.
Like, what happened off the back of that was Netflix just said they're monitoring the situation. That was, like, the final update. And, again, I think that's another perfect example.
We need to trap him in the upside down now.
Yeah. Like, God, could you imagine if it's, like, Matt, I know it's, like, Will Byers, but it would be awful if he just got nuked going into the final season, given that, like, he has a story there to be told that we've been dying to see for multiple seasons. But I do think that, like, one aspect of this, which I find funny, is that if Millie Bobby Brown had done exactly what Melissa Barrera had done, there's no way that Netflix is firing her. Like, no way.
Well, that's the thing. Well, you know, it is one of these hilarious conversations when, you know, we've had it with celebrities over the years with so many different scenarios where celebrities have done truly horrific things. Mm. They've done quite bad things and they've done questionably bad things. And, you know, different level of celebrity get deleted for different level of reasons. And even in my own mind, it's like, you know, did I ever listen to like Gary Glitter much growing up? Like, nah. Like, so the second I was told that, yeah, I probably shouldn't ever listen to his music again, like, I'm fine with that. And then, you know, then it gets to people that I like more and more. And I'm like, I start to question the things they've done to see morally, do I have a problem with this or do I not? You know, and it's just this weird, murky world that we're in now. Like, you know, if a story came out about Rob Zombie, or I don't even want to say someone that's passed because I just don't want to put their name in dispute. Let's just say Rob Zombie. Do you know what I mean? If he did something and it was like, oh, okay, like, how bad does it have to be at this point? Because I like him that much. Whereas if it's just like a random director that I liked one of their movies, it's like, okay, cool. Like, I'll never watch Hell House again, then fine. That's okay. You know, whereas if like, yeah, if it's like, oh yeah, you can't like Chucky anymore, it's like, what? Come on.
Yeah, you know what I mean? we just have too much access. Like what you just said, we know too much now about all these people, what they do, and especially the behind the scenes going on. Like you said, like, back in the day, we just wouldn't know any of this. We would only know about the film. Whereas now, we're getting like day by day updates exactly on what is the future of this franchise. And so that is like the final part of this, is that Variety kind of did like a, here's the state of the film right now. And they said, it seemed to fans like the planned sequel was collapsing in real time. However, even before Barrera was fired, plans for the next Scream was being retooled. Ortega's exit had required the creative team to make some alterations, according to individuals with knowledge. But they had still hoped that the actress might be convinced for some sort of cameo. That's no longer on the cards. James Vanderbilt and Guy Busick, the writers of the previous two Scream installments, will now work on a fresh draft to present to filmmakers. Some set pieces and twists may be preserved, but the movie will need to find new protagonists. Now, there is only one final point after this, but I have to just jump in on that because that sentence I find preposterous. The idea that some set pieces and twists may be preserved, but the movie will need to find new protagonists. Like, the idea that you could just take the Carpenter sisters out of this film and just throw two other random people in, and everything else still makes sense. It's like, well, no, because that's terrible writing if that's the case. So that frustrated me.
I think set pieces is okay, because they could be like, oh, okay, they're just going to cut to a sorority house and Buffy the Vampire Slayer gets wrecked by a ghost face. I'm like, yeah, cool, that could happen. Like, you know, that could have happened in any version of Scream 2 and that would have been fine.
Yeah, you like the ladder apartment sequence from Scream 6. Like, yeah, that would have worked, with other people.
Like, yeah, so I think set pieces, but when it says plot twists, I'm like, that does trigger me.
Definitely. But then, yeah, the final bit, just as another hilarious thing to talk about, I bet you didn't see this coming. Variety's report also mentions Neve Campbell and Patrick Dempsey as actors the studio may potentially be bringing into Scream 7, but they've made it clear that neither actor has been in active negotiations up to this point. Dempsey has not been seen in the franchise since Scream 3, while Campbell didn't appear in Scream 6 due to a salary dispute.
Do we even know if Dempsey is like, Are we saying that then he's her husband?
I was going to ask you that because, in my mind, we all just assume that what happened post Scream 3 was that kind of...
Because he just got a little bit creepy and had a movie night with her in Scream 3. We just assume that they've shacked up ever since.
Yeah, well, the thing is, there definitely obviously wasn't in the last film, but in Scream 5, in my mind, I feel like I've made this up, that when Gail first met Sid in the movie, she was like, "Oh, how's Mark?" or something. Like, I feel like that happened.
Maybe.
Like, I don't know for a fact, but yeah, we are assuming that, and obviously this report would then assume that the writers are assuming that as well.
Yeah.
Again, this is, to me, is just another nail in the coffin of, like, the reason why I love Scream 6 was the moving away from legacy. Now, if we're just going to bring back a guy who is, like, in Scream 3, you know, like, he's good. We just saw Patrick Dempsey in Thanksgiving. He's a great actor, yeah. But, like, he's not this beloved part of the franchise. I don't want to see more legacy, full stop. And then to the idea of bringing Nev after... Yeah, I know. Like, I can't believe that. I mean, I should probably refresh the Scream news button, because I'm sure in the last 10 minutes, it's like, Matthew Lillard signed on for Scream 7.
Matthew Lillard bought Twitter.
While you talk about this, I might actually Google his name just to be safe. But yeah, like, this final part... It's just a nightmare. This is not what I want. I said it at the time, post Scream 6, that I didn't want a Scream 7 because Scream 6 was so awesome and I really didn't think they could top it. I know you kind of disagreed, where it was more on the line of, well, Scream 6 was so good, why not try and make another one that's as good? Which is totally fair.
Scream 1 to 6.
Yeah, exactly. So but like, yeah, I was just more, I was being cautious back then, and obviously this has completely changed since then. And I'm even more firm in the belief that, like, right now, everything involved, hell no. I do not want to see a Scream 7 in the slightest. Do you want to see Scream 7 right now? And especially with this last little, I guess, give your thoughts on the idea of Nev Campbell and Patrick Dempsey making their dramatic return?
Not after the last 10 minutes we've just gone through. No, I don't want to see any Scream movie, let alone Scream 7. But yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for Scream, and I just think you can make it right. Like, and if you make it right, it's fine. And with all of these things, it's like, Nev returning could be cool. Like, it could be, like, if the right script exists. But my biggest problem is, what they've clearly done is, we have a placeholder for a Scream movie, and that placeholder is getting sooner and sooner, and the production company is like, well, fuck, we wanted Scream to come out, I don't know, Halloween 24, 25, whatever it had in its head, and suddenly now we're 6 months on and we've lost an entire cast, directors, we have no script, and is it just going to get rushed and snowballed into this mess and just shove a load of money at Nev and have her in it? And yeah, that I hate. Whereas if they just went, do you know what, this is a train wreck, let's just shelve it, we get a banging script. That banging script has Nev in it. It doesn't have Nev in it. It has Stu in it. It doesn't. Like, I don't care, like, who comes back or who doesn't, if the script's a banger and it does make sense. Because Nev's great. I love Nev. I love Sydney. And the right script for Nev and Sydney could be okay. I don't know what that script is because I don't make movies. But yeah, that's my biggest thing, is that I'm just petrified that they're just throwing shit at a wall right now because they're in panic mode. And that's not the Scream I want. The Scream I want is the Scream that's right for the franchise. And I believe that exists in multiple facets. I think it exists with the sisters that we had in, you know, the core four. I believe it could exist with Nev. I believe it could exist with a brand new cast. But I don't know how to make it into fruition, and clearly no one else does right now that's in the world of making this movie. And that's my biggest concern.
Yeah, for sure. I just Googled Matthew Lillard, and it's so funny how, like, there's so many news stories in the last few days with his name in the title. Hilariously, 6 days ago, Deadline talked about him signing with a new representation company. So I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. Getting predictions ahead.
He is balling.
And
yeah.
Then 4 days ago, Matthew Lillard confirmed Stu is still alive. So that's where we're at with that. But yeah, it's just a nightmare. It's just crazy. It's unfortunate. And I think the best place to leave it is, we should just take a page out of Christopher Landon's book, that everything sucks, stop yelling. Just a brilliant quote. One for the ages. I'm going to remember that for many, many years.
Yeah, that's going to be my go-to now.
Yeah.
I think when you, because you made me yell for a little while then, and you knew you were going to. And I think in future, when you try to trigger me, I'm just going to be like, look, everything sucks, stop yelling. And then we can just move on. news much quicker.
I've like done a complete 180 on my thoughts on that tweet because now I think it's a banger. It's so shit that it's great. So yeah, I'm sure Scream is in the right hands with this guy. He's not freaking out and panicking at all.
Scream, it's so meta that it makes sense. It's so deep when you think about it.
We had to talk about that because it was obviously such a huge story.
Yeah, I'm sorry, everyone.
It's fine. The one thing I had this here as a note, as well as just one other related thing. Because I was thinking about that Universal Untitled Monster film, obviously, that the directors are doing, that is coming out in April. Melissa Barrera is the star of that film. I was thinking in my mind, like, oh, is it the same production company? Because I assumed it was, based upon, obviously, the directors being allowed to go off and do it. And I was thinking, well, if they've just fired her from one project, they're not going to spend millions of dollars distributing and promoting a film where she is literally the lead. But that film is by Universal, whereas Paramount is the company that owns Spyglass. So these are two different companies. So, yeah, it is funny that, like, all of this has happened. I mean, I was expecting a trailer and a title for this film like any day now. And Universal, I mean, there's no way that film comes out in April now. There's just no way. Like, it's going to get delayed at the very least, because that would mean, yeah, a trailer and we don't know the name of this film that comes out in 5 months. and they're not going to release that now, being like, hey, remember this girl? Like,
this girl that got deleted?
Yeah, so it's just crazy. Like, I couldn't believe this when it unraveled last week, and I was so gutted we didn't get to talk about it straight away last week. But I'm glad we've had like a week to kind of see all these updates, and maybe I wasn't as angry as I was last week, but I'm still pretty fucking angry about the whole thing. It's just frustrating from a fan point of view. It sucks that we have to talk about all this murkiness, you know, around something so beloved to us. But yeah, we have to move on. But yeah, that is the crazy news this week. Shall we talk about this week's film?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about Hell House LLC Origins, The Carmichael Manor. So yeah, this is obviously the fourth movie in the franchise, but the first kind of spin-off, obviously this being positioned as Origins, it's interesting because watching the film, it just felt like part of the franchise. I know we're in like a different place, but it's so tied to the overall kind of lore and story. And that's something that is very overwhelming with Hell House for a movie that is just about spooky times in a house.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we all love because they do it so well. There is such a crazy lore and kind of deep story.
They throw me every time.
Mm.
Every sequel because as a brief kind of summary of the franchise so far, like not synopsis or anything, but just like, you know, the first movie was this like unexpected little gem that was just this fan footage kind of really scary moments, and just one that the inner world of fatigue of this genre and spookiness and loud noises is still like hit with us both. And kind of when we kind of saw that and they said, oh, there's going to be a sequel and stuff, I thought, oh, okay, they're going to go down the route of just brand another hotel and you know, have it be in fan footage and it can just be a completely different thing, or even if it is in the same hotel, it will just be very adjacent. And then we continue to get these the second and third movie that was just building this lore around the Abaddon Hotel. And when this one got announced and it was called like Origins and Carmichael Manor, I was like, oh, they're finally doing it. They're finally going like full just spin off, and it's just going to be in title Hell House, and it's not going to have anything to do with the hotel. And suddenly this is just a straight up prequel, you know, so interwoven in the lore in such hilarious ways, where it's like you can certainly watch this as a standalone movie if you've never seen Hell House, and you can be like, oh, okay, there's this group of people in this Carmichael Manor, and they're getting the spookies happen, and you'd have a good time. But there'd be so much like bits that are just conversation where they start talking about this hotel and they get this antique clock and all of this other stuff where you're just like, why? And it's because there's this deep lore from these four movies. And it's one where I feel like it's not the smart choice to build this as a, like, to get people to watch it. But I really respect the hell out of that they're leaning into the Hell House core fan base, which is, you know, as two people that have seen all of the Hell House movies, I'm happy about, because you know us, we're all about that lore and that continuing a franchise.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really wasn't expecting it with this one, that's for sure.
No, like the fact that we get so many answers to a lot of things that have, you know, like those clowns that have been kind of so prevalent throughout the whole franchise and were so iconic in that first movie. We really get like so many answers in this film that I just wasn't expecting. I really thought this was more of a Hell House Presents, and it would feel like more of a spin-off. It's probably unsurprising then that this is the same writer and director of the previous three films.
Yeah.
So it is more just treated as like, I don't know, to me it's weird that they've branded it this way, because I just don't think it works. I think it's easier just to call this Hell House 4. Because we've already done time stuff. You know, they don't all follow like a chronological order. So it's fine to have found footage from the 80s and that be a part of the film. Obviously, this is primarily set now, but like a lot of it is to do with the past. But we've had that in all the other films. So it's not even like that's a distinguishing feature of Carmichael Manor, the film. It's like they've all done that. So, yeah, I don't really know why they call it Origins, because it makes me think, well, so are we getting, do you think we'll get like a Hell House 4 and then like a different Origins? Because this just feels like equal to the other ones. It's weird.
It's very weird. But yeah, like I say, I do respect that they really lent into the lore. And yeah, with this, I guess, I struggle to remember with Hell House originally that was like Cold Case Investigators at some point, wasn't it? Was it the original? Or certainly the third one was all to do with that as well. But I get confused.
Yeah, the first film was a shot as a documentary, follows a group of Halloween haunted house creators as they prepare the 2009 opening of the popular haunted attraction Hell House. Tragedy strikes on the opening night when an unknown malfunction causes the death of 15 people. So the film leads up to the tragedy and what really went wrong. So yeah, it was like that. But then, yeah, we've definitely had the kind of sleuthing angle before.
Yeah, like the sleuthers going there afterwards and stuff. And
yeah,
like,
the second one was a group of journalists who went to the Abaddon Hotel.
Went back to the Abaddon, yeah, okay. But yeah, like this is the same where it's basically the cold case of the Carmichael Manor is kind of the family, what was it, five or six of them that lived there. Two of them got brutally murdered, and it was five of them, wasn't it? Because one of them died in a car crash earlier that year, and then two of them got brutally murdered, and two of them have been missing for the past, you know, what, years, 50, 60 years or something.
Well, it was the 80s, wasn't it? I think it was late 80s.
Oh, you're right, it was 89. I remember now from all the...
so it's like 30.
But, yeah, and basically, these cold case investigators are now going there and filming their entire experience. Kind of Margot and Rebecca, who are a couple, and who is Chase? Is he the brother, Margot's brother?
Yeah,
because early on,
are they a couple?
Yeah, they're a couple, aren't they?
I didn't even know that.
I'm pretty sure they are.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that you've said it, but like, I just didn't.
No, they are.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because that's why Rebecca's kind of like got her other job, and she doesn't really want to go, but she's going with Margot. And when Chase first turned up, I thought he was just like a friend. And then he kept saying like mum. And I was like, you don't normally say that to friends. You'd normally like say my mum. Mm. And then I was like, oh, wait, are they brother and sister? But anyway, those three end up staying in the Carmichael Manor. And the whole kind of package of this movie is this is the footage that they recorded that's been found and has been made into this documentary. And I really kind of brought into it early on. It just reminded me so much of the original movie and how much I like that, where it is this package documentary that it feels like I've just gone on Netflix and I've clicked the Carmichael Manor like documentary, and I'm just watching it, and we've got these talking heads and we have this footage. And it reminded me a lot of that. What the fuck is that hotel one on Netflix?
Oh yeah, the one that like basically
the Cecil Hotel or whatever. Yeah, Cecil Hotel.
They basically did American Horror Story based upon that.
Yeah, they did. And like this felt like that, where it was just like very well packaged. I really enjoyed the interviews at the start. I enjoyed, like, contrary to my golden rule, because my golden rule is, don't give me prequels when I know what happens to the characters, and don't tell me at the start of the movie what happens at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But I actually kind of dug it with this, like I do with these documentaries, because that's what happens in a documentary, where the movie starts and they're like, well, you know, after everyone was brutally murdered, this is the footage we found. So I'm like, great, there's not much hope for Margot and Jessica, is there? Rebecca,
yeah, like, I agree, like, with you in that I love the overall presentation as this kind of thing put together, and with the talking heads and everything. And I would also, like, typically I don't like hearing that.
I hate it.
And I think for me, the only reason why it didn't trigger me as much hair is because I've seen three of these films before, and everyone gets wrecked in these films. Like, Hell House isn't a back and forth like a Conjuring movie or any of those spin-offs. It is just a bunch of characters in distress until they all get killed. Like, there's never anyone that really survives that I can remember. Everyone just gets destroyed, which I do find refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of wish it was less of a curveball, because it is kind of obvious that everyone's getting wrecked. But I do like this one straight off the back is like, you know, it's literally that's why I'm talking about it very openly in a show that we're quite spoiler worried about, because literally in the first 5 minutes, they're like, yeah, so Margot and Rebecca, like, they're dead, but let's see what happened to them. And they only survived 4 nights. And it's like, oh, okay, like, fine, let's see it. And yeah, I really enjoyed the package and how it was presented. I liked Margot and Rebecca, and I liked their conversations. What I found with the whole movie, to be honest, was that I really enjoyed what they did throughout most of it, but what they were doing was just delivering on low hanging fruit, where they were just doing the most simple shit that's effective, but I found it effective and entertaining. And it was like, yeah, if this was the first time I ever saw it, I'd be even more so. You know, Paranormal Activity, when you watch 45 minutes of the door moving a little bit and it scared the shit out of you. This is what this movie does very well. And yeah, just so often, you know, with the clowns as well, when we eventually kind of, they get to the manor and they're being shown around by a guy that we have no idea who this guy is and why he has anything to do with the manor, do we? Like, no. He's just like a estate agent, caretaker, bloke that somehow, you know.
just a ghostly presence.
Honestly, it would have been great if it was somehow worked in that he was a ghost or something. It would have been great.
There's always a future films.
There is. And yeah, he's shown around the house, and instantly if there's like a locked room and he's like, they're like, oh, what about that locked room? He's like, nah, it's just storage. Like, I don't even have a key for it anymore. How do you know what's in there? And I'm like, brilliant, what's in there? And movies often, then that would be the finale. You know, what is in that room is the finale. I remember with X, when they're like, oh, the basement's crazy. And it was almost anticlimactic when we got there, because I was thinking about it for an hour. Whereas the second, the bloke isn't even out of the drive and they've broken into that room.
Yeah, it's good.
And again, I really like that. And instantly they break into the room and there's the two clowns in there that are just terrifying. And they look like they're moving at all times.
Yeah.
Like, their heads are just constantly moving, but I don't think they are moving, but they might be moving. I don't know. Are they moving?
Yeah, like, the way they do that is such a fine line that they've executed flawlessly every time they've used those characters.
Yeah.
Where, like, I'm staring at them, and I'm like, I'm convinced its head position is slightly off to when we enter the room, but you just can't tell.
Because it's almost like the optical illusions when paintings, when you walk in an art gallery, the eyes follow you around the gallery. And it's like that with these clans, that as the camera angle moves, you're moving in the room, and that's the perspective that's moving, but it makes it look like the clan's head's moving. It's genius.
Yeah, and it's really so good. Subtle,
and it's terrifying, and it works. And, you know, they do this, and they kind of, that muddled with little creepy band symbols and creaks and shadows, like, just throughout the whole movie was, like, pretty effective for me, where I was like, do you know what? If this was what, like, these spooky movies were all the time, like, I'd be less annoyed with them, because just deliver on, like, the low-hanging fruit. Because I enjoyed this movie. Like, I, when credits roll at the end, and I'm like, I think this is spoilery because I'm talking about the last few minutes, but I'm really not going to go into specifics. But one of my biggest bugbears with the movie is when we get to the last 5 minutes, they just get sloppy with being, let's just have the camera freeze all the time.
Yeah.
So when a character gets attacked, instead of something happening, we're just going to get screaming and the camera freezes and, like, still scary images. And I just don't find that effective. And I find it really annoying, where I'm like, Do a Blair Witch if you want. Like, knock the camera out of someone's hand and then show me jack shit. Just show me, like, a doorstep, you know, just a doorstop and nothing else on screen with just screaming. But don't give me this flickering shit. Because
it feels so artificial and not earned.
Yeah, like, the rest of the movie, the camera is seamless. And the second this happens, and, like, they're running, it's not like the camera hasn't been through, like, the ringer in the movie, but suddenly when the character gets attacked, that's when it's going to start flickering. Like, it really does trigger me. And so the last, like, few minutes of the movie did annoy me, because I think that was probably the worst parts of the whole movie, which was a shame, because ultimately, yeah, the really simple scares, and, like I say, the really low-hanging fruit of just being, like, we're just going to be creepy and having the door move a bit and have noises, and these fucking clowns, like, they work every scene they're in. Like, I wanted them to not work, and they work when they're not moving. They work when they're moving. They work the whole time for me, where I'm just like, yeah, they just, and to the point where I was, and that's why I keep saying low hanging fruit, because I'm like, I feel like they weren't doing anything clever. They just had stuff that works. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know whether that's being harsh, but it just feels like there's so many times where this feels like it should be like how to make a horror movie simply, where it's like, yeah, just like less is more, apart from the last 5 minutes of the movie. And that's when they tried to do more and just didn't really deliver. And I think they should have just had, like, the brother, like, the reveal of the brother, like, that looked quite good, and it should have just been stuff like that, you know? And then, like I've mentioned before, Blair Witch is the perfect kind of way to do it, where you amp it up, and then just end. Like, if you can't show crazy shit, just don't do anything. Just have it end. Just have the camera get dropped, you know? Overall, I had a good time with this movie. It was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I'm pretty much there. Why. What's that?
I don't know why either, because it is a pleasant surprise. But I've really enjoyed all four of the movies at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's definitely something for me that would be a slight negative, which I'll get to in terms of just it being the fourth of these. But, like, overall, yeah, I'm pretty much there with you, and agree with most of what you said. I'm probably slightly less positive on it overall, but I really like early stuff. I think all of that stuff is great. Really like the dynamic between the three characters, their reason for doing it. All of those kind of early, just it's tension without the payoff, but all of those scenes work so well. with a creaking door, or like the hand around the corner at the end of the corridor was one of my favorites. That just looked so cool. So all of those scenes were excellent, and I really liked kind of them going to the antique shop and getting the clue and all that stuff. It was just really well done. And we're kind of then getting spliced with stuff from the past, which is really interesting.
Yeah, the talking heads were really good as well, weren't they?
That bit is what really sells the presentation. Like, both the two talking heads were both brilliant for different reasons, and they really sold it for me. And the movie would have definitely been way less enjoyable without those in it, because normally they're like the, oh, here we go, we're like filling time. But they were both excellent. Talking about the story with, like, especially with the flashbacks, like, I really appreciate how much kind of story and lore is in this, because they have built something that's kind of really crazy at this point. But, like, I can't even begin to follow it all.
Me neither.
it's like, it's so crazy at this point. And I think that if you watch all four of these in quick succession, it would be a way better time, because you'd get the stuff that we still really like about, like, the horror execution, but you'd fully understand the characters and the timeline so much more than I do, you know, because I'm half remembering films I've seen once when they came out. You know, I've never rewatched any of them, and at this point, it really
about the clowns for a chunk of this movie. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, they are in the original, and they're in the basement and all of that shit. I forgot that they were like exactly the same.
Yeah, I did, and it's like you see them, but then something like that, it can easily jog your memory, because then you just remember those cool moments. But when it's like characters' names being referenced and stuff, and obviously there is just so much lore to this, that's when I just get completely lost. So, like, I appreciate it's there, but I can't really judge whether or not I liked it or not, because I could not tell you what was going on. So yeah, really liked all the setup and that, but it did start to lose me, this film, particularly the final third, when it was just kind of crash, bam, wallop, and a lot of action. Like, I didn't find it as effective as, like, the slow, drawn-out tense scenes. Some of them were still pretty good, but especially, like, it, when these movies start to go into the two characters just running around screaming, that is when it starts to lose me. And especially when they went outside. I love that these films are always catered to, like, indoors. It's something that I think about a lot for the franchise. And when there's like a, like, it's not too long, but we did have a section involving just characters kind of running around in the middle of nowhere. And that's always when it starts to feel like you're just watching a shit Blair Witch. Like, that's just something that's in my head that will forever be there. When I see fan footage in a woods, it's just, like, impossible to disconnect that, and it will always feel like a cheap imitation. So, like, I didn't enjoy that part of the film at all. And then when we kind of got to the conclusions, it just was a lot of those freeze frames that kind of showed too much. You know, I enjoyed it a lot more when it was left to my imagination, and it was probably a little bit too long in the tooth because of that. But I still think it's decent overall. And another scene I really loved, probably easily my favorite scene, was like the job interview or whatever it was, on the computer.
Oh, that was great.
Like, that was such an interesting take again, where you kind of bringing in like a bit of screen life into this fan footage film as well. And use of backgrounds, use of cameras, it kind of evokes so many different moments in so many films that I love, but kind of has its own different twist on it, with some really good tension as well. So really like that part. One thing to me that did stand out in a weird way, and it's strange because this has like never been the case, is that I thought the acting, when they were playing the characters, was great, but when they were playing scared, I didn't buy it at all. And it's weird because I've thought about this a lot watching just horror films all the time, and how, like, you know, you're seeing characters in distress who think they're going to get killed. That's something we see pretty much every week. And, like, for the most part, probably all the time, I believe it. And I've always been enamored with that, where I'm like, I can't even begin to tell you how impressive that is on like a scale of acting, where like you're putting yourself in that place where you genuinely think you're going to die. And I'm believing it watching it. And this was one of the only times I can remember watching a film where I'm like, oh no, you look like you're playing scared right now. So that did take me out of some of those final moments, especially is it, the one who did the job interview, is that was Rebecca, right?
Yeah,
like her, because she's mainly the one on camera, obviously with Margot filming some of it. Like, when she's like, oh, I'm scared, I just didn't buy it at all. And that really took me out of those moments.
Yeah, she came across angry.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like overacting or what. I don't get what it was, but I just didn't believe it. It was like, oh no, you're like, it's like someone went and seen. Now you're scared, and it felt that way to me. Whereas again, none of the previous movies have had that. Pretty much every horror film I watch, I consistently believe the people are in those situations. But it was bizarre to me that stood out, and I don't know why. But yeah, I did enjoy it overall. I would say it was in like the good range, and I do think that. The reason why I'm not as hot on this for just a good film is because it's the fourth one. And that is something that just is the reality, that we've had four of these in fairly quick succession in the last few years. And, yeah, like, but I think we watched, when did 2 come out? That was like 2018. Yeah, so kind of, yeah, 3 in 5 years. That's a lot. And they're good, and I think that the first one is really strong, and then from that point on pretty much they've all kind of merged together, where like I couldn't tell you if 2 was better than 3 or 3 was better than 2, and like they both had scenes that were really good, but it has kind of all merged together. And I think this is an equal part of that, where I'll remember that job interview sequence. I'll remember the early sleuthing with enjoyment, you know, going forward for the franchise. But like, it is the fourth one now. And those clowns are exceptional. I can't believe how much kind of they're getting out of that. Like, that's the thing that holds up the best going into the fourth film, is that I really thought, like, there's no way they're going to do that again. You know, those clowns in that basement in that first film, and they still pull that off. So that shows you that is not an issue.
But they're going to lean in hard on the clowns going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And like, that was so cool that we got so much story with them. Like, again, as someone who cannot remotely comprehend this story, that was something that I could just enjoy as like a standalone thing. Where I was like, I know we've seen the clowns, but I don't even remember if they've even been referred to as like named characters before.
I don't even know whether we knew that they were humans in them, or whether we thought they were moving mannequins. You know what I mean?
So that was something that you could just treat for this film and be like, no, I think I've learned something from that now that actually has added weight to them and makes them more interesting going forward. So,
because initially in the first movie, I think like they were just props for Hell House.
Sometimes, because obviously in this film we see them like hit them and they're like rubber.
So obviously, it's like it's almost like they are suits that the Carmichaels were wearing, and then they, instead of like regular people just hanging them up, they put them on a mannequin.
That's what it's like supposed to be, I guess.
I mean, I guess, because I do want to just talk a little bit spoilery on that. So I don't know if we just want to throw up a spoiler warning.
Yeah, can do.
Just because, spoiler alert for, I don't think it's like major, but it's just something that like, when a movie does something like this, it really left a smile on my face at the end when they showed that, because they talk about, obviously with the kind of sleuthers and how they're kind of obsessed with going to multiple of these houses and everything, and how Margot kind of as a kid was almost adopted from a fairground, and like that's why she's now like trying to solve these cold cases, almost like she feels responsible because post her failed abduction, multiple kids then got abducted from fairgrounds. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that was great.
And it never got touched upon again. And then, like, the last shots of the movie was the picture of Margot that we saw of her at the fairground multiple times. And then it zooms out to show that the fucking clowns were in the background and they were operating the fairground ride at that fairground that she went to, but there was only one of them in the picture as well, which was even more perfect. And I was like, it just gave me chills of like, oh. And then like my first thought was, you bastards. Like, I just love that, where they just kind of, it was so obvious, and I hadn't thought of it. And they even said something like, oh, the most obvious thing is always in plain sight, or something they were saying at the same time. And it felt like low key, like these reveals that we have in these movies. You know, it's not like a Saw 1 twist, but it felt like a just this nice, like, oh, it was there the whole time sort of thing. And you know, who's the killer in a Scream movie and those sorts of things. It gave me like that that lower version of a Buzz, where I was like, oh, I'm just, I liked it. And I think, like with that, it's just a nice way to keep this lore just really tight, that it's like the manor, Margot, the clowns, they're all just linked to this first movie in such an intrinsic way that I wasn't expecting. So yeah, I did like it.
Yeah, that was great. That was such a cool moment. And it, like I say, it really does show you that, like, he has, I think if you did watch them in quick succession, there wouldn't be any, like, oh, that's a jump, or oh, they retconned that. Like, in my mind, for as little as my understanding of it is, it seems to all make sense. Which I think is definitely a positive.
And I think they're four, like, different enough movies as well. Like, there's a lot of the same stuff, but plot wise, you know, we've got the, you know, you have the haunted house attraction going wrong in the first one. You have the detectives in the second one. The third one had all that backstory where they ended up, like, that one got really zany, where they jumped back in time, didn't they? Like, do you know what I mean? There was, like, this jump where they were in, like, an alternate dimension almost sort of thing. It was really weird, wasn't it? And kooky, but enjoyable. Yeah. And then, obviously, this one being in an adjacent kind of, you know, property and everything else, I just, it doesn't feel like they've just made four of the same movie. Because I think, like, Paranormal Activity, for example, kind of really felt like they'd just gone down that path quite quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, for recommendations, I'd say, you know, this is, you know, I really enjoyed it. I think it's a good recommendation. I think it's a weird one where, with so much lore and everything in it, I think I would just have to continue to recommend Hell House as a franchise. And would I recommend watching this on its own? I'd probably say watch the, you know, if you're listening to this and you've never seen Hell House, my recommendation is go watch the first one. And then if you like it, continue. Because I don't think you should just watch this on its own.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a really easy recommendation for me of, like, if you've liked the other three, absolutely give this a go. But if you've never seen a Hell House movie and you're like, oh, it's Origins, is this a good jumping off point? In my opinion, no. I would not recommend this as your first Hell House movie. I think definitely just go watch the first one.
Yeah, the franchise is strong enough, in my opinion, that you've now got four good movies to watch.
Yeah, and it's again, this is just another example of Shudder doing things right. Because this is like a franchise now that they obviously picked up after that first installment, you know, similar with like VHS, where it kind of had a history before them, and they've kind of, like, you know, made it become a franchise. And I think these movies are clearly cheap to make, but with very good quality, you know. And it's, on a personal level, I would really like to see this writer and director Stephen Cognetti do something else, because he's done four of these now, and I would love to see him definitely, for me, do a Screen Life film based upon that kind of one sequence that I loved. I would love to see him take away the camcorder from the hands of characters and be limited to screens and see what he could do with that medium, you know, being similar but different. But from, like, a Shudder perspective, I think they'd absolutely be like, Steve, do you want to do another one, mate? And I think he's so happy, this just being his baby. Like, that's the thing for me that is so overwhelming when you watch these films. There's such a love for what they're doing. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's so clearly not just we're just shoveling sequels out for the sake of it. This is so clearly a guy who's like, he's got the mind map of the next 30 films, and he's just praying that he lives to see the day where he can make them all. And, like, I have to respect that. That's so cool and very unique in horror these days as well.
Yeah, that's what I really like. That, like, I'm the same, that, like, I would be happy with him doing either, but ultimately, like, I want him just to keep doing these because he likes doing them and he's good at doing them.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see that, like, you get this, you know, director continuality throughout the franchise, which is uncommon, you know. And so, yeah, I think that's great. I think is Summer of 84 on Shudder?
It was at some point, yeah. I'm not sure if it still is.
Yeah, those bastards. That's what they need to. They need to franchise that. That's what they need to do. I want my sequel.
Yeah, let's do Summer of 84 and not do Psycho Goreman.
I want both. I didn't even know
what you were saying then, and I was getting mildly triggered while you were saying it. But yeah, I agree, because to me that was perfect. So, like, the fact Summer of 94 was written by the absolutely perfect ending of Summer of 84. Like, yeah, still one of my favorite endings to any film we've ever covered for this podcast. Amazing film, and then the ending goes, oh, this is one of the best. Like, just perfect. It might actually be my favorite ending, because I can't think of one off the top of my head that ends so strongly. It's so good, because I did not see it coming in the slightest. I remember the feeling when I first watched that film, and I was like, oh my god, this is what the killer has done here to now... It's like the best... Yeah, it's like a happy and a sad ending at the same time. It's perfect.
But the only thing is that I want to see what happened. You know, that's the thing. I want Summer of 94 so badly. And when it was just when you were talking about Shudder and how well they've done with these franchises, because I do completely agree that they take things out of obscurity like Hell House, or they take something like VHS and Creepshow that feels like they're done. And they bring them back. And I just think, like, you know, they got Summer of 84, and yeah, it's such a shame that they haven't tried to get that back. And, you know, I guess PG.
Yeah, well, those guys are doing two other films. So, you know, they're off doing other stuff. But, like, when was that around? I want to say, was that like 2017 when we saw that?
I believe so, 17 or 18.
Yeah, because in my mind, I'm like, I'm more than happy for it to be at least 10 years between those films, because I want to see all of those actors age 10 years. So I'm more than happy that, yeah, it would be awesome if we get that. I do think that that's like a pipe dream, where the plot was so well written that I don't even know if they did it as like a sequel reason. It was more just like the perfect way to end this film.
I know what you mean.
Having this character just constantly in fear of this guy coming back. But it is... genius. Like, the second they announced that, I'm like, that is a film that I just really want to see in it. And I'm sure, like, the thought of it is what will always be better than the reality, but it'd be so cool to see that.
That's exactly what I was gonna say, that, like, that's the problem, that, like, I don't think there's a way that you can visually represent what they set up, because it's such a difficult thing to do, because I don't even know, because that's the thing, I don't even know what I want, you know. Do I want the character to just be in an insane asylum? Do I want them to be constantly looking over their shoulder? And ultimately, you know, do they just become Laurie Strode from the recent Halloween movies?
I thought that,
and I don't want to see this film. Because that's the only way you could probably function as a human being. Like, I think the Halloween movies did do that justice. As to that's probably what that character would become, apart from she wouldn't have been doing any shagging to have kids.
There's three solutions. There's Laurie Strode, there's padded cell, or there's 6 feet under. Like, those are the only four options. And neither of those make for an interesting film. So, like, you can't really do it.
I mean, I think the insane asylum you can do. I want another Dream Warrior.
Yeah, don't we all? But yeah, that was our discussion on The Carmichael Manor. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that is it for another week. I think we're done here, because we had a extended news segment talking about that whole shit show earlier. But yeah, unless you've watched anything lately you want to briefly touch upon, or are we finished here?
Well, the only thing, I haven't watched anything, but I have been having a little listen to something, and I'm almost there with it now, which is the old just to continue the little Hellraiser conversation. That I did go back, and I have been thirsty for more, and I've almost now decided to listen to the Scarlet Gospels and get the audiobook, and it's just as enjoyable as an audiobook as it was a read for me. I think it's well done. It's well kind of presented, and just reminds me how batshit crazy that book is, because I forgot how, like, I knew like a lot of it was in hell. I forgot that, like, 80% of it is in hell.
Yeah.
I thought there was loads more on Earth, and, like, with Harry and doing shit. And really, there's not. Like, he basically just opens a puzzle box, tries to get away from it, and then just gets sucked into hell. Like, that's basically what happens. Like,
Yeah, it's why that is unfortunately just impossible to adapt.
I know, that's what I was thinking while listening. Like, I've been listening to my car journeys to and from work, and like, it just, I was like, I would love this to be a film so much, but it's impossible.
Oh, I don't want a film. Like, I think the only way this would work is as a HBO miniseries. I think that's the only thing that would, like, even come close. And even that would be difficult. But if this was, like, 10 episodes with HBO's bar of quality and the right people doing it, that they could pull off something special. But, yeah. Like, it's such a magical story. Like, we talk about Hellraiser a lot. But, like, if you are, for some unknown reason, a Hellraiser fan and you've not been in contact with the Scarlet Gospels, like, you have to do it. It is unbelievable. Like, I just still can't believe that exists. I cannot believe that Clive Barker, after all those years, wrote like a fully fledged novel. It's just crazy to me. It's a dream come true.
That's what's so sick about it. And I mentioned it when I first read it, and you've mentioned it when you've read it recently. But like, the way he describes horror is unlike anyone else.
Yeah,
he, you know, King has the level of like being so high with the quantity that he puts out is unparalleled, but Clive Barker, just the way that he describes horror, the way he describes violence, the way he describes just everything is just on another level. Like, and for me, as someone that's not a huge book reader, you know, and as someone that enjoys King but has enjoyed the cinematic universe of King more than reading his books, with Clive Barker, I'm like, with Scarlet Gospels, like, I don't feel like it, you know, I would like to see it just because I like movies and TV shows more, but I think he's done enough of a job that he's painted that picture in my brain. He's so vivid with things, you know. I'm not going to spoil it, but like, I'm in the final acts now, and the way he describes like these characters and the situations, this kind of death room that he's now describing, is just, it's so vivid in my mind from his descriptions, unlike almost any other author has been able to do. It is really fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, he is by far my favorite in terms of those descriptions of the levels of violence, where I've not experienced anything like it. And I need to go back, because there's so much Clive Barker material out there.
I know, and I've not touched any of it.
Yeah, same. Like, there's is it Cabal, I believe, was what Nightbreed became. Like, I really want to read that because I love that film anyway. And I love to hear, like, his descriptions of all these characters and that entire world that he created. I imagine that one is amazing. And I agree with you. Like, his level of description, I'm totally there with you. And I'm sure it's completely different for both of us because that's the amazing things about book. But, like, I have that fully fleshed out idea in my head that feels like I watched a film, to the point where, when I listen to songs that mention demons in hell, there's a very specific image of hell that I now have in my head that was in my head when I was reading that book. That is like just my go-to now of like, oh, that's what hell looks like. And it's not from any other depiction of hell I've ever seen before. It's specifically Clive Barker's description in that book. Like, that's how much it left an impact on me.
It's how he describes the villains, you know, the demons. It's how he describes the architecture, the landscape. Oh, yeah. It's just everything where I'm like,
the building that they go into, like the level of description on the architecture of that one building is just insane.
Yeah, you know, but in a way that isn't boring either. You know, because, yeah, if you have half a page of talking about the architecture of a building, I'm not going to enjoy that. You know, but it's not that, that's not what he does. And it's just, he builds this picture. And I think there was the opening of the book is incredibly violent. And I remember that made me feel uncomfortable reading it, and listening to the audiobook, I felt super uncomfortable. And then later on, there's a scene with Norma, which is, again, I wanted it to stop. Like, it was so violent that I wanted the audiobook just to skip it, you know. And it's and I think that's, you know, I've not had that with a book for sure. And I've, and with you know, the audiobooks that I've listened to, I've never had that with those either. So yeah, it's really good.
I get that feeling when I'm reading it as well, of like, Clive has just created these characters, and they just end up having a mind of their own, and like they end up doing things that shock him, because he's then writing the description in a way to you where it's almost like he is a character, where he's saying to you like, and it's going on, it's doing this, and you are thinking like, but you're the person who wrote this, but you're describing it in such a way where you disagree with it.
He doesn't want it to happen, but it's like, just
you're mortified that this is happening, but you're the one that created it. Like, it's so genius. Like,
maybe he is Harry D'Amore, and maybe he did just witness this, and he had to document it and write it down, and that's what the Scarlet Gospels are.
To me, that's like my only way to reason it, because he's too much of a genius that I can't think of any other way of explaining it. Like, he truly is one of the all-time greats in any medium. Like, I don't think Clive Barker will ever get the credit he deserves across all the mediums, because obviously most of his work is in literature and plays. And then it's like, oh yeah, and by the way, I made this little film. You might have heard of it. It's one of the greatest horror movies ever made. And that's like his little... That's not like the thing that he wants to be known for.
I need to get that bloody PS2 game that he released. That's what I need to get.
Yeah, he's done a few. I got The Undying, which was like an old PC game that I used to love back in the day. Yeah, he did that, yeah.
Yeah, like I had that and I never played it.
He was, again, like, just like the film world, got completely shafted, because he got attached to so many projects that end up being cancelled.
Yeah.
Similar with what happened to Del Toro in the last decade, where he just suddenly was like, he was desperate to make games, and just every game he got attached to, because there are so many games that get cancelled, he just got very unlucky. And so Clive Barker just kind of went, yep, see you. And it's such a shame that that's also happened to Del Toro. Like, it's so rare that we get these geniuses from, like, other mediums come into video games. And,
I know.
It's just a difficult world. Great times. Someone got the Hellraiser bingo right at the last second there for you bringing it up. So well done.
Welcome. you know, I was coming up short with some of the other ones, so I thought I'd better bring that one.
Exactly. Yeah,
I'm not just gonna drop them now. That's cheap.
Yeah.
Sorry, your bingo cards have to stay empty. You got PG.
No, it was natural as well.
Sorry?
That was a natural was like one.
You got your Hellraiser, you know, you got some Rob Zombie, you did all right.
Yeah, we took off most of them. We're not giving you that center bingo card, the obvious one. We're not doing that this week.
I'm not doing it.
But
I'm so close to doing it. I saw stuff as well, but I'm not.
I'm ending the show now. That was episode 372. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. How could I start now?